Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour and happy Hanukkah. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. This is the first of two Hanukkah editions this year. Next Sunday is also Hanukkah. In this half hour of the show, we'll be featuring a rebroadcast of Menachem Posner of Chabad.org talking about public Hanukkah menorah lightings. We have an eclectic assortment of Hanukkah music. No, I have a little dreidel note. We're not going to play that. The portion of the week, which is the portion of Miketz, can be found in chapter 42 and following in the book of Genesis. We're going to talk about Hanukkah in the second half of the show. We have an awesome Hasidic story. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Rabbi Yehuda Teichtel of the Berlin Jewish community presided over a memorial ceremony in Berlin for victims killed in the attack last week. The body of a missing Israeli woman in Berlin, Dalia Eliakim, was identified last night. The Israeli embassy in Germany is working to coordinate with the family to transfer the body to Israel. Dalia's husband, Rami, is hospitalized as a result of the attack in Berlin. He is seriously injured, but not in danger. IDF forces uncovered one of the largest underground gun factories ever found in Judea. Israeli soldiers found the factory built beneath an apartment building near the city of Hebron. Israel's airlifting Syrians injured in Aleppo and treating them in Israeli hospitals. Once healed, the Syrians are returned to Syria. Police in Whitefish, Montana. This is a very interesting story. I cannot imagine how many Jewish people live in Whitefish, Montana. I have a niece that lives there. Police in Whitefish, Montana are conducting extra patrols after a white supremacist website called on readers to take action against Jewish residents there. Police are reviewing emails and social media posts sent to the Jewish people mentioned on that website. This one is going to leave your head scratching, but he gets what he gets. Dylan Roof, the convicted killer of 9 black parishioners at a South Carolina church, is refusing to undergo a psychiatric evaluation, which is the only thing that could prevent him from being put to death. Roof says that psychiatry is a Jewish invention and does nothing but invent diseases and tell people they have problems when they don't, unquote. Okay. And finally, this year's International Bible Quiz in Israel will feature a married couple squaring off against each other. Yahar Shalak, representing the U.S., and Yael Froelich, representing Canada, are two of the 27 finalists. Stay tuned. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Menachem Posner, who is a researcher for Chabad.org. And if you've never been to www.chabad.org, you want to do that after, of course, the show, of course. How are you, Menachem?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank God. Thank you for coming on. It's been 40 years of Chabad lighting public menorahs on public property. This is, seems like a major milestone. It started with one back in 1974. Would you have any idea how many there are worldwide at this point?
That's a very good question. It's many thousands. Many thousands worldwide in countries on every continent and just about any country where there are Jewish people. But the exact number is unknown, especially when we consider that it's no longer only Chabad who is putting up these menorahs, but you also have all the kinds of other groups that are also, you know, putting up menorahs as a result, to the degree that it's no longer even within any census taker's ability to calculate.
It's really snowballed. So tell us, tell us, Rabbi Posner, why should there be a menorah? You know, we know it's this thing people do at home. They light them in their window, whatever, you know, or in the, next to the door. Some people have the custom. Mm-hmm. It's a thing where people get around. They play dreidel. They eat latkes. They give out coins. They give out gifts, whatever. Why the public expression of Hanukkah menorah lighting?
Well, I guess the mitzvah, the commandment to light menorah, it's a rabbinical commandment, and it's unique in that it's not just something that we are obligated to do, such as, you know, fasting on Yom Kippur or eating kosher or putting on tefillin every morning. But there's actually a purpose with it, and that is what's called Pirsumei Nisa, which means publicizing the miracle, the Hanukkah miracle, the Jewish victory over the oppressive Greeks and the subsequent miracle of the Hanukkah, the menorah in the temple having lasted for 8 days instead of one. And the purpose of the menorah is to publicize this, which is why, as you mentioned, their original custom was to light it in your courtyard doorway that at one point switched to either a window or an internal doorway. But the purpose is still to publicize, and therefore lighting menorahs in public is very much in keeping with the spirit of this mitzvah. So even if we've all fulfilled our technical obligations by lighting our menorahs at home, as a community, we're then taking this mitzvah to the next level when we do so in public, sharing the Hanukkah events and miracle with the wider passersby and anyone who may see it.
Oh, interesting. So, so Rabbi Posner, so does a person then, if they say, want to save on time, energy, etc., can I just go to the menorah lighting downtown and say, I did menorah?
No, you certainly can't. Especially since very often many of the public menorahs, especially places like Detroit where it's cold, are lit with electric lamps, which are not valid for fulfilling the mitzvah. Your personal mitzvah is to light a menorah at your home, wherever you're staying. My mitzvah is to light the menorah at my home, wherever I am. And the public menorah, we can say, is perhaps a communal mitzvah, similar to the fact that it's accepted custom to light the menorah in the synagogue every night after services. So just like we light in the synagogue, and the person who lights in the synagogue then goes home again and lights at home, in the same way we can all participate in the public menorah lighting and should do so, and yet we'll later go home and light at home.
So you can
probably pick up a menorah at the public menorah lighting. If you don't have a menorah, chances are if you show up to the public menorah lightings and ask for one, someone will be more than happy to share with you a starter kit.
Good point. Good point. So the first public menorah lighting, could you tell us about that? How did that all happen in 1974?
Well, it began in Philadelphia. The Chabad representative, longtime Chabad representative to Philadelphia, is Rabbi Abraham Shem Tov. And after hearing the Rebbe talk about the importance and the significance, when I say the Rebbe, I mean the Lubavitcher Rebbe of blessed memory. And after hearing the Rebbe talk about the importance of spreading Hanukkah observance to Jews all over, he had what he then look back at as a wild idea of how about if I go ahead and put up a menorah out in the public, right in front of Liberty Bell by Independence Hall. Now remember that Hanukkah is celebrating, among other things, our freedom to practice religion as we see fit, and therefore a most symbolic place to commemorate this, of course, would be at the birthplace of American freedom, at the heart of which is the freedom to worship, according to our own understanding, which we Jewish people, along with all other Americans, treasure so very much. And so he went that night, one night of Hanukkah, Saturday night, with a few rabbinic students who had been over helping him out over the holidays, and they put up a 4-foot-high wooden menorah, lit it there, snapped a few pictures, and that, in effect, was the first such public menorah lighting. And then, with time, things continued to progress. The next year, already, he returned and put up a larger menorah. This time, he had permits, and he arranged a public lighting. And concurrently, at the same time, while he was lighting his second annual menorah lighting in Philadelphia, on the West Coast, in San Francisco, there was a large menorah being lit. And so we can say that that was probably the first giant menorah lighting would be have been in 1975 in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is such a thing like this? It's obviously just a general question. What does this do for Judaism in America, would you say, Rabbi Posner? This is really a thorough question, I know.
Right. Well, I think it does a number of things. First of all, and the Rebbe actually points to this as well, that there have been so many people, and there's no way of tallying this, who have seen these menorah lightings and been reminded, oh, it's Hanukkah, oh, I'm Jewish, and then gone ahead and reconnected to Hanukkah and in Hanukkah observance. So it certainly served and serves to spur increased observance of Hanukkah. And then there's the communal sentiment that I think really shifted as a result. People realize that you can be comfortable with your unique Jewish identity. You can be comfortable with being Jewish in public. It's something to celebrate. It's something to be proud of. It's a good thing. And over the past 40 years, we may have experienced a serious paradigm shift in this regard and not even noticed it, because it happened gradually and incrementally.
Mm-hmm. What about the idea of feeling like inclusive, like we're not just passers through, as Jews have been through so many countries?
Say that again?
We're not just like passing through Americas, but since with the public symbol of a menorah and thinking that this is, because I know when I first saw one that I was like, wow, I'm like part of this. This is now an American thing.
Yeah, certainly it's reflective of, and perhaps one of the causes of American Jews feeling comfortable in their own skins as Americans and as Jews. We're no longer, cowering in the ghetto as we, once had been generations ago. We're comfortable with ourselves, with our identity, with our unique observances. And the truth is, I think, in the same way, it's kind of opened up Judaism to the wider public. They see Judaism as something that they are more familiar with. They see it more often. They know what it means to them.
Indeed. If you're just joining us, our guest is Menachem Posner. He's a researcher for Chabad.org, which I suggest we're going to talk about that at the end. Give you a couple of minutes to talk about Chabad.org. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about 40 years of public menorahs. Now, Rabbi Posner, it wasn't always so rosy and so easy, was it, for the public menorahs?
No. As the public menorah phenomenon grew, primarily starting in the early 1980s, 1982, 1983, there was resistance from groups who felt that having any religious expression, although generally the opposition was centered on the menorah and they didn't have such a big problem with non-Jewish religious expression, but their claim was that having religious expression on the public land of many of these menorahs are in front of city halls, state houses, capitals. Of course, there's the National Menorah on the White House lawn. That's part of this. And they felt that this would be a constitutional issue and violating the separation of church and state. And as a result, there were court battles. Many of them championed by Matt Lewin, a very well-known attorney who really adopted this cause as his own and fought tirelessly year after year in state after state to establish the Jewish community's right, and the truth is the religious community's right to religious expression on public ground, and quite successfully in almost all cases.
Mm-hmm. So can you sum up just briefly how the Supreme Court decided that it's not a violation of church and state to have what some would refer to as a religious symbol on public property, Rabbi Posner?
Well, I guess you're probably referring to the Supreme Court ruling in Pittsburgh, which was Allegheny County, I believe.
Yes.
And in that case, they ruled that in that specific case, it was a menorah next to a non-Jewish holiday display, and they ruled that both of them together, the menorah being next to another display, does not show that the menorah Jewish observance is being favored and that they're both getting equal play, so to speak, and it was therefore allowed. But there were subsequent rulings in other cases where, in fact, it would have been a menorah by itself. So that case was very significant in establishing certain precedents, but there were more cases after that that continued to show that even if it would be a menorah itself or another symbol itself, it's also okay because we as Americans have the protected right to express our free speech, whether it be secular or religious, in public space.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So could you describe maybe in the course of your research, what mm-hmm. were some of the more unique menorahs that have been put up?
Well, I guess, you know, you always have certain menorahs that reflect where they are. So in Venice, let's backtrack a bit, and that is that in 1974, at the same time when Rabbi Shem Tov in Philadelphia had put up his public menorah, there were a group of yeshiva students in Brooklyn who built a little menorah out of wood, mounted it on a car, and drove it to Manhattan, and were giving out Hanukkah menorah kits to passersby, and then they lit that menorah, which they had mounted on a car. And that gave birth to what's now the ubiquitous menorah mobile, where people mount menorahs on their car, and there are menorah mobile parades all over the country and all over the world. And this really goes hand in hand with the stationary public menorah, are the roving public menorahs that just about anybody living in a larger urban center is going to see driving around during the Hanukkah holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these, are going to adapt according to where they are. So, for example, in Venice, you're not going to drive a car with a menorah on top. You're going to mount your menorah
on a gondola,
of course. So you'll have that. In certain places, they have been mounted on the backs of elephants, which, in addition to being a local mode of transport, is actually significant because on Hanukkah, when the Jewish armies, the Maccabees, fought against the Greek armies being, you know, larger and with superior arms, and part of their superior arsenal was were elephants, of course. So there's a certain symbolism that now the menorah is being mounted on the back of an elephant instead of Greek warriors coming to subjugate the Jewish people in the Holy Land. So you'll have those. And then there are some that are very significant by where they are. In the early 1990s, you know, having a menorah put in the Kremlin or in front of Russia's White House, which is a seat of government, that was actually the first public menorah in the, it was still the Soviet Union, was in front of the White House. And that was unfathomable that, you know, in the heart of communist, godless Russia, which was then crumbling, you'd have a public menorah expressing freedom of religion placed at a central government location. So that, of course, has a lot of symbolism. Last year, there was the first menorah at, or giant menorah at, Brandenburg Gate, which, you know, for the Jewish people, that, of course, has a lot of symbolism with regards to the rise and fall of Nazism, and then the division of Berlin, which was right over there. And so, you know, expressing our freedom, and the menorah there last year, of course, is also very significant.
Mm-hmm. What about, like, materials? I found it very interesting that in West Bloomfield here, they're mm-hmm. actually going to make, they have, I'm not sure how high it is, I think it's 18 feet high. It's being made out of canned goods. With the idea being that after Hanukkah, they're donating the canned goods to the local food bank, you know, what's it called, the Yad Ezra, so that mm-hmm. it's not just this, like, me type thing, but it's more of like a giving thing, a social action program. What about use of the menorahs, like, for social action and social awareness, right, you know, being involved with communities? What are some of the things that you've come across, Rabbi Posner?
Right. So this canora, it's sometimes called, and many of its various...
Canahara, as we say, yeah.
Using other, you know, using it, building it out of things which are later, you know, given to charity. You know, they have toy menorahs, which, and then the toys have been given to children. This is something that's begun probably within the past decade, and it's gaining a lot of popularity. I know there are schools where every year the school will have a school project of collecting and assembling one of these menorahs and then, you know, giving out whatever it's made out of. And that's a very nice, certainly a very nice twist to the public menorah, and one that's really developing and changing every year as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
On the subject of what it's made out of, so again, that was another one I wanted to mention that was in Hawaii. There was a menorah that was made out of tiki torches. Again, just that was, you know, reflecting the local culture. And you have others. I know that in the late 1990s, and there were, you know, when they were building the first public menorahs in Hungary, and this was really before they had access to a lot of what we now have in our Home Depots and our Lowe's, they really kind of were very creative in what they made the menorah out of. You know, with some car parts and some wood, just whatever they can cobble together to put up these functional giant menorahs, because they did that, that's what they had access to.
Mm-hmm. So it really doesn't matter what the menorah is made out of. The main thing really is the fact that it should have a place for 8 candles and a lighter type candle too. So, what was the other thing? What about, I mean, I've seen, there have been designers that have gotten involved. There's a famous Agama menorah. I don't know if they still use that in Milan.
Right.
And some of them get really pretty involved. I mean, the one in Detroit is 26 foot high, and it's, like, welded together, and it takes them 3 days to put it together and a day to take it apart. So what about, like... I know that the menorah in Central Park lists itself as the world's tallest menorah at 35 feet. So I'm thinking 35 feet, that's pretty high. You're going to need a pretty good cherry picker to get you up there. But why hasn't anybody done one, say, can you top this and done one at 45 feet, say?
So I think the answer is that, we have to make a distinction that not all public menorahs are kosher menorahs. A kosher menorah has to be kindled with real flames. And for that, there's a maximum height. So the world's largest menorah, I believe, is the world's largest kosher menorah. So that one is done with real flames, and it's about as big as you can get and still be a kosher menorah. On the other hand, you will have larger electric menorahs, which are not kosher for the mitzvah. You can't make a bracha. You can't make the blessing invoking God's name when you light them. And those, you will have even bigger ones. And, you know, in Israel, at least at one point, I had a giant balloon menorah, which, of course, had no fire anywhere near it. But it was this giant blow-up menorah that you could see from one of the major highways.
Oh, that's so cool. I thought you were talking like a balloon that was floating in the sky with, like, a basket underneath. That would have been that would have been really awesome. So, you know,
that would be. Maybe next year.
Menorahs on helicopters, you know, skywriting menorahs, as the case may be. So that's it. Okay, we've got a couple of minutes. Just tell us quickly about Chabad.org, the organization that you're a researcher for, Rabbi Menachem Posner.
Okay, so Chabad.org is now, right now, within the next, no one knows exactly when, but it's celebrating its 21st birthday. We are the first an oldest Jewish website and the first and oldest religious website. In fact, it's, I don't know if anyone has the exact numbers, but it's within the first few thousand URLs ever registered. So, you know, it's older than just, you know, it's older than Google. It's older than many, many websites. It's, and it was actually, it's the first online Jewish presence. And we really function as a Chabad house on the internet. When you enter any Chabad house, of course, you know, it's a place of Jewish learning. It's a place of inspiration. It's a place of growth. It's a place of getting together with other people and growing together. And that's really things that we foster on our website. We have a wealth of learning opportunities, Jewish learning, and it's really a community onto its own with people who come regularly and interact with each other in the comments and really get to know each other through the website. And it's just a fantastic resource for just about anything Jewish a person may need. Mm-hmm. Information, or even, you know, our oldest feature, and that even is older than 21 years old. This goes back to the late 1980s, before there was internet, as we know, with websites. So the founder of Chabad.org, Rabbi Yosef Yitzhak Kazin, whose yard site, the anniversary of his passing, was actually yesterday. He unfortunately died very young. And he was the founder of, he's called the father of the Jewish internet. And he, in the late 1980s already, was on these, you know, message boards, you know, answering people's questions and spreading Jewish information there. And so that really continued into what we now have as the Chabad.org Ask the Rabbi team, where people come and ask the rabbi. And as a rabbi, I'm sure you know, Rabbi Finman, that everyone comes to the rabbi with a different question. There are some who will come with, you know, counseling, expect, you know, with advice on relationships. Some people come for information. Some people come just for a listening ear. And whatever they come for, we try to cater to them through our Ask the Rabbi team, which really is a wonderful, diverse group of people. First of all, we function in many languages. So we'll have, we have a German team answering questions in German. We have the French team, French, Russian, Spanish, Portuguese, Hebrew, Italian, and so on. I may have missed one or two languages.
It's pretty, so as very result, universal.
Yes, so we have people specializing by languages. And second of all, we have people with different strengths. We have researchers, so if you have an academic who's researching something and needs some resources, our researchers will be able to help him or her. We have trained counselors, actually, who will help. You know, people come to the rabbi and they need help with their emotional issues or relationship issues. So these trained counselors will, you know, obviously within the constraints of the internet, try to help these people to the best of their ability. And then, of course, we have a lot of just helping people with whatever they need. And that's what we do.
Okay. And that address for that website again is?
So it's www.chabad.org, C-H-A-B-A-D, chabad.org.
Okay, that's going to do it. We want to thank you so much, Rabbi Menachem Posner of Chabad.org. And onward and upward, I guess, with a happy Hanukkah.
Yes, indeed. An early happy Hanukkah to you and to all your listeners.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herr Schulfenman, here you are listening to The Jewish Hour. Before we do anything else, public service announcement. These are the public, we just got through talking about public candle lighting menorahs. These are the ones that are going on this year. Tonight, Sunday night at the Franklin Cider Mill, 14 Mile and Franklin Road, from 5 to 7. There'll be a public menorah lighting of an art menorah made of tiles that little children have decorated. That's really cool. Tomorrow night, Jewish Ferndale, which will be hosted by yours truly, will be meeting 1725 Pinecrest at the Jewish, newly renovated Jewish Ferndale building from 6 to 8. The Chef Carrie food truck will be there. We have the Eichmann's choir will be there. Chazon will be doing beeswax candle making. There'll be lots of fun for the kids. Donuts, cider, the whole business. It's also at the tomorrow night at the Orchard Mall will be the Hanukkah Wonderland sponsored by the Beis Chabad Torah Center of West Bloomfield. That's at between 5 and 7. Tuesday is Hanukkah in the D. That's at Campus Marshes between 5 and 9. You can go to HanukkahInTheD.com, find out more information. And Wednesday is the big night at the Southfield Civic Center between 5 and 6. That in Commerce at 6:30 at the corner of Commerce and Commerce at the Chabad House of Commerce, and in Birmingham from 7 to 9 p.m. You can go to all three of those if you really tuned or played correctly. Birmingham is 7 to 9 at Shane Park in the center of Birmingham, and you have a lot to keep yourself busy on Hanukkah. So let's listen to some Hanukkah music. This is called Hanukkah Light, and the artist is Ari Goldwag.
Raises my sights, Hanukkah light feels so right. Eight small flames shining through the night. Ooh. Ooh. Walking in the darkness, sorrow all around, looking for some joy.
Of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Shulfen, are you listening to the Jewish Hour? Let's listen to some more music. This is the Klezmatic Hanukkah Dance by Woody Guthrie.
Ding-a-ling, dress you pretty and sweet, sweet, sweet. I'll dance you right out your door, 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 and you must be sad no more.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Schulfinman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour on 1500 AM and now FM 92.7 in stereo. Up for your listening pleasure, this is Benny Friedman doing what has become a traditional song, Light One Candle by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And it's just for you.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children, with thanks that their light didn't die. Light one candle for the pain they endured when the right to exist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice justice and freedom demand. But light one candle for the wisdom to know when the peacemaker's time is at hand. Don't let the light go out. It's that we need to never become our own foe. Light one candle for those who are suffering pain we learned so long ago. Light one candle for all we believe in, that anger not tear us apart. And light one candle to find us together with peace as a song in our hearts. Memory that's valued so highly that we keep it alive in that flame. What's the commitment to those who have died that we cry out they've not died in vain? We have come this far, always believing that goodness would somehow prevail.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. It's Hanukkah. Hanukkah was last night. I love Hanukkah. What's so special about Hanukkah is it really shows and indicates Jewish fervor, what Judaism is all about. When we light the candles last night, we lit one candle. Tonight, we're going to light 2 candles because it's the second day of the miracle. Tomorrow, we'll do 3 nights. Until we get to next Saturday night, we'll light 8 candles. We see that what's the deal here? That there's a progression. It's a very interesting thing. If you have a candle, it gives off so much light. If you have 2 candles, it doesn't give off double the wattage. We can discuss this in physics and whatnot, but from empirical evidence, in 3 candles, it's not 3 times as one. It grows exponentially. But it's just one more candle. So this is Judaism in a nutshell. Every little thing a person does brings an increase of light into the world. Not just like one candle's worth, exponentially. We see, look at the Maccabees. the heroes of the Hanukkah story. What was their deal? For them, good enough wasn't good enough. They weren't going to settle for status quo. Let me tell you something. There's a law that says if you have no other oil, you can light whatever oil you have. This is talking about in the temple and lighting the menorah there. So ideally what they needed was the oil with the seal of the high priest, which certified that this oil was 100% no contamination whatsoever. The Greeks, their deal wasn't in getting rid of Judaism. Their deal was deholifying it. That's not a word, I just made it up. Making it mundane. Because what's the difference? All they did, they didn't pour out the oil. They didn't spit in the oil. They removed the seal. So now, somebody looking at this bottle of oil would have no idea, has this oil been contaminated or not? And the Greeks said, what's the diff with the seal, without the seal? It's exactly the same thing. You guys are being stupid. So technically speaking, the law states if you have only oil which has not been certified, you may light oil which has not been certified. The Maccabees said, we didn't come this far to rededicate the temple. One of the meanings, the translations of the word Hanukkah, is to rededicate. We didn't come this far just to do good enough. No. And it says that the part of the miracle, a major part of the miracle, was that they actually found that one jar, because the Greeks were methodical, meticulous, going through every single jar, breaking every single seal, and saying, what's the diff? The Maccabees put forth that extra effort and looked. We found one jug. And therefore, because they put that effort in, they were deserving of a miracle. We're not going to have Hanukkah-esque miracles. It's not going to happen to us. But my grandmother of blessed memory used to say, my bubby used to say, if you woke up this morning and your name's not in the obituary page, you're doing very well. We are experiencing miracles every single day. The fact that you can drive from point A to point B and not get hit by another car, absolutely miraculous. What are we doing? One little thing every single day. One candle. And however way that candle is manifest itself, it could be a quarter in a charity box. It could be a smile to another person in passing as an act of kindness. And all that brings down more godliness, more goodness into the world. And our expression is, we add, we increase, we get stronger. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Schulfen, and here you are listening to The Jewish Hour. Sorry, I just hit the mic there. You want to get in touch with me? Easiest way, go to RabbiFinman.com. What will you find there at Rabbi Finman? Right on the homepage, a contact link. You'll also find archived editions of the radio show, a whole year's worth now. Thank you very much. You'll find archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, which are insights into Judaism presented by yours truly in various media in a hopefully entertaining and in educational way. You also find the most important donations page. Yes, we wouldn't be talking about donations if people would be actually stepping up to the plate. This is the last week in December. We're still not even close to November. Station is very patient. It's Salem Communications, wonderful people. They take care of me. I take care of them. Listen, go to RabbiFinman.com. Go to the donations page. It's Hanukkah. One of the things you're supposed to do is increase. Increase in giving your charity. It's the end of the year. Are your 2016 taxes in line? Have you been giving enough? Go to the webpage, RabbiFinman.com. Do donations. You'll appreciate it as the Jewish Hour Now, approaching 21 years on air, will continue for your listening pleasure. We got a story here. There was a Chabad Chosid by the name of Asher Sosunkin, who I knew as he was like the caretaker of the synagogue in New York, but he was not some caretaker dude. He was a very special person. He was sent to Siberia for 10 years for practicing his Judaism. Comes along now, he's there, and another guy suddenly gets the idea that he wants to get involved with Judaism as well. And so he started talking with Asher, and Asher kept on telling him, "This is a dangerous place. You know, you could get an additional fines for." He says, "Me, I'm a religious Jew. I have no choice." He says, "But you don't." I said, "I want to keep Shabbos." And he started keeping Shabbos, and he started eating kosher. And he came over and said, Asher told this man about Hanukkah. And he said, "You know, maybe we can get some empty sardine cans. We can make like a menorah." He says, "What are you talking about? I know a guy in the tin shop. He'll make a menorah for us. Tell me what it looks like." So he drew this crude picture. The guy came back with a shiny tin menorah. It's like, wow. So they're in a barracks. The barracks has, 300 people in it. Some Jewish, most not. Stalin, Amar Shemo Yizichram, was not really partial who he sent to Siberia. And they lit it one night. Two nights, three nights. Comes the fifth night. And there's a surprise inspection. Everybody next to your beds. Now, these two people, this Rabash and this other people, they had managed to make it so that their beds were next to each other. And they lit the menorah between them. And everybody stood up. And they said, somebody said, "Throw the menorah out the window. Throw it out. Throw it into the snow." He said, "I'm not putting out the menorah. I didn't light it five times to throw it out." So this big, burly sergeant, lieutenant, whatever he was, comes walking around making a count. And he stops at Asher Sosunkin's bed and takes a look at this menorah. And he says, "Piat," which means five. And Asher Sosunkin shook his head yes and said, "Piat." And the guy kept walking. He says, they couldn't believe it. And he walked out. It says, first of all, you're not allowed to have a fire in the barracks. The barracks are made of wood. They're worried about fire. So no smoking, nothing, and no candles, nothing in the barracks. Second of all, you're not allowed to openly practice your religion in a prison camp. So they could have gotten them on two offenses. They have no idea who this lieutenant was, this warden was. Later on, it was discovered that this warden was indeed Jewish. And he himself had heard that Asher Sosunkin was lighting a menorah in the barracks. He couldn't believe it. He said, "I got to go see for myself." So he scheduled this whole big thing, made this whole thing like he's a big tough guy. And he said, if Asher Sosunkin, a prisoner, can light a Hanukkah menorah in a Soviet Siberian prison camp, me, a free man, quote unquote, so can I. That's going to do it. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have awesome Hanukkah, a whole week Hanukkah. Yes, light those candles, eat those latkes, scarf those sufganiyot, those donuts right down. Have a great time, and we'll see you back again next week. Take care. Zudikese latkes essen mir, geschwinder sind Kinder, die Chanukka Lichter davon. Lass mir alle singen, lass mir alle springen und lass mir alle tanzen in Korn. Lass mir alle singen und lass mir alle springen und lass mir alle tanzen in Korn. Chanukka, oh Chanukka, come light the menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all dance the horror. Gather round the table, we'll give you a treat.
dreidels to play with, latkes to eat. And while we are playing, the candles are burning low. One for each night, they shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago. One for each night, they shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago.